Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door, you're running over, that's for sure.
Warning, this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And as always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And you will be getting this right before Christmas, so the Saturday before Christmas. So I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful holiday and that you get all whatever it is that you want, right? In Patreon of Convicts, I will be dropping my Cajun night before Christmas, probably on Monday, and everybody, all lifers, will get my regular read of Twas the Night Before Christmas. So happy holidays, love and peace, and all that good stuff. Now look, we today are continuing the State versus Scott Peterson, the Scort series, and thank goodness we're finally getting down to the meat of the matter, y'all. You stuck with me this long. This is pretty important stuff that's coming up. So when I left you last, the judge had read the instructions to the jury and sent them to pick the foreman and begin deliberations. And sworn in the deputy. Now, we'll go to Thursday, November. I'm going to skip around some of this because it's not that important. But Thursday, November the 4th of 2004, they had arguments from a lady that was representing the media on the media wanted access to the in-chamber transcripts, and they wanted live video coverage of the verdict, stuff like that. The judge denied all that. Then the jury's still out. Let's go back to November 4th. So on November the 4th at 9:42 a.m., the jury want to see the following exhibits, and it's a shit ton of them, y'all, and I don't even know what they are, so I'm not going to read it all to you, but that's standard, right? And it's a lot of shit in this case, but it's a lot of things they requested. Number 7, 8, 10, 11, 13, 15, A through C through, you know, 28 through 68, 100, whatever, fuck, it's a lot. And they have had requested some from the defendant's side, and so we'll skip over all that. So juries deliberate. That the day closes, and you come back on Friday, November the 5th, and the jury wants to see some more exhibits. And this is an afternoon time. They wanted people's 23, 23A, 79, 90, 207A, 212, and the defendant's T, U, and Z, and 5Q, et cetera. So, but this is a little bit touchy, a little bit. I'm going to say scorts, kind of scorts, so what happens. Then the four person, you know, that's the one that has contact with the deputy who has contact with the judge, said the jury wanted to see the boat again. All right. And this is on Friday. So the judge's like, all right, we could do that. And they say they schedule it for Monday morning, which is Monday, November the 8th. And the judge comes out and says, hey, you know, this is evidence. People's 299 and the trailers, people, the boat trailers, people's 300. So when they do this, it's the judge, Scott Peterson, his lawyers, and the prosecution, the district attorneys were there. And the jury gets to take another look at the boat, right? Not that unusual. I mean, I guess you want to see what you could see, and you have your questions in your mind. Nobody knows why they want to see it. But some of the jurors want to get into the boat. They want to sit in the boat. And the judge says, go ahead. Well, Garagos loses his shit and objects to the jurors getting in the boat and rocking the boat, literally. Okay. So I'm going to read you a little bit of this. Garagos says, the boat is in a trailer. It's not on the water. And the court excluded my demonstration on the water, which I would tell you was a lot closer to what the prosecution theory was than having a boat on a trailer in the parking lot and allowing somebody to get in it and start to go back and forth. So I guess y'all are trying to see if the boat would take on water if you're rolling a body out of it, which I would tell you it wouldn't. But judge says, DeLucci says, in my defense, that's debatable, but go ahead. So Garagos continues. He says, okay, the problem is we have now taken evidence. I want to reopen and I want to show the demonstration. And there is, it's a major problem because we have a situation where jurors now have gotten inside the boat. One juror actually more than one juror, stood in the boat and started to rock it back and forth in the boat. That's taking the taking of evidence, and that is a juror demonstration, and they are forbidden to do that under California judicial law. And you read the instructions to them. They have now done precisely what you forbid them to do, and DeLucci cuts them off. Well, with the court's convenience, incidentally, and Garagos continues, I don't think that the court intended to do it, but what actually happened, and I don't think the court would dispute, at least two jurors were inside the boat rocking around. When I say rocking, I mean rocking. They were standing on one foot, putting weight on the other, putting weight back and forth. That is precisely what is not allowed under California JSC. It's multiplied or amplified by the fact that I had the demonstration on the water in a similar boat, which obviously shows you can't do what the prosecution says you can. You know, they have been led to believe that you have got the same kind of stability. I will state for the record that when I start to object to what was going on, that the court did at the end of the viewing, tell them that, remember, the stability is not the same on a trailer as it is in the water. But at that point, the cat's out of the bag, and it's a major problem. So I don't want a mistrial. What I want is to reopen. And the judge cuts them off and says, I understand. Judge fucked up, y'all. He shouldn't have let them get it. I mean, you can't reenact, like when I, the first court series I did, Jessica Chambers, they took the jurors out to the actual burn site. Well, that's one thing, but you can't take the boat out in the water. First of all, it's never proven to this point. It's never proven that he dumped her body out of the boat. And if you're going to do it, you have to replicate the exact circumstances in a boat in a parking lot in a trailer. It's totally different than a boat in the water. So anybody could figure that out. But the judge says, I understand. And Garriga says, I want to show the demonstration, that he's talking about the one he wanted to get in trial, and the judge denied. So the judge says, okay, I did advise the jury that they should bear in mind that this boat was not in the water as they stood in the boat. And I also advised them that the boat appeared. Also, the boat was secured to a trailer. The reason why the court permitted the jury to get into the boat initially, I didn't know they were going to jump up and down on the boat. Well, Judge, you fucking should have thought about that. I mean, come on, man. This is Scorsese, the judge's part. But anyway, continue. He said, I didn't know they were going to jump up and down on a boat. Was the fact that the district attorney had presented an experiment where they had a representative of the district attorney's office had actually laid down flat in the boat. And I thought it was important for the jury to take a look to see if there was enough room for somebody to sit, lay down flat in the boat. That was not, in my opinion, taking additional evidence because it was already set forth on the record. The same case. People versus Mauser makes, I'll allow the prosecution to address that issue. Well, sounds like judge knows he fucked up. So Gargos insists that the actions of the jury constituted an experiment, and the California JSC expressly forbids an experiment by the jury. He asked for either of two remedies: to reopen the hearing and allow admission of his boat demonstration, or a mistrial. Now look, homie's got it. I mean, he's fucking got him by the law, right? But Judge Alucci, what does he do? He denies this request, saying that in the case People versus Mauser, the right of the jury to carefully scrutinize evidence was affirmed, and the demonstration could work as well for the defense as well as for the prosecution. That's going to be a big appeal issue, right? So, all right, I'm going to skip over some of this other stuff, y'all. It's about them wanting to get the cameras in for the media and all that. That's not going to have any effect on making what the prosecution's done and what Garagos and them have done and how the judge has done to make this case scorched. So, basically, Garagos, you know, didn't want the cameras in, saying it's against the prohibition against filming jurors or spectators. And they had asked for audio feed of the verdict so the hallway wouldn't be filled with, you know, tons of people. And then anyway, just whatever. I'm just going to skip over that. So let's see. All right. Hey, ladies, are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? Well, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living in our environment right now. It's in your food, your water, the air you breathe, the clothes you wear, your skincare products. They all mess with your hormones. Then there's the natural hormone changes your body goes through, premenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean you have to suffer through it. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore because now you have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone support and supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Well, my wife says it makes her feel like her own self again. And that's what women mention over and over in the reviews. And there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code RLRC for 15% off today. That's HAPPYMAMMOTH.com and use code RLRC.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
And so the judge, Lucci, then resumed court, and he read some additional instructions to the jury. All right. So Tuesday, November 9th, 2004, they had an in-chambers hearing. And I'm just going to skip it, y'all. I'll read it. So Judge DeLucci ruled the hearing to be sealed because the information therein would irreparably harm Scott's right to a fair trial, potentially prejudicing the public opinion in the case and to protect the sanctity of the jury and the integrity of the deliberative process. So what happened? This is this, y'all. The jury was brought in. This is in any case, this is scorched, but it happens. The jury is brought in, and juror number 7, y'all, after all these months, is replaced. Okay, that's the second juror. Remember that. The other one got taken out during the middle of the trial. Juror number 7 is replaced with alternate juror number 2. And so the judge at least tells the newly made up jury that both Scott and the people have a right to a verdict reached only with full participation of the 12 jurors who returned the verdict, and he admonished them to start the deliberations from the beginning. He also reminded them that they are to decide all questions of fact from the evidence received in this trial and not from any other source. Ooh, okay. That's appeal, because it's going to come out, and it does, on appeal why juror number 7 got their ass in the crack, what they did wrong. All right. So now they've already been deliberating for days. Now they got to start all over from scratch. Wow. Okay. Wednesday, November the 10th. So here we go. Scores. After another meeting in the judge's chamber, Judge DeLucci announced to the media and the public that the foreman, the juror number 5, has been removed from the jury, and alternate number 3 will take his place, and that juror number 6 is the new foreman. And the jury was brought in, and DeLucci made the change and then instructed them to begin deliberations from the beginning and to decide the same thing I told y'all. All facts of evidence presented during the trial. And then he sent them back to deliberate. Holy fuck. That's 3, y'all. That's a couple in a couple of days, and including the jury foreman. That's your head cat. That's who everybody elected to represent them to the deputy to the judge, right? Wow. Garagos files a motion to just like totally discharge the jury, which I think he has a valid point. At this point, the jury knows we've been with these cats for all these months, and now they're getting their ass in a crack, and they're getting swung right from the jury. Holy fuck. But who's to say the people that were getting kicked off weren't for Scott Peterson? And who's to say that they weren't for the prosecution, but still not good. And so Garagos on November 17th files a motion to discharge the jury, and he filed it and included this back and forth between himself and Judge DeLucci in the response to the first foreman's concern that jury deliberations were aimed at pleasing the public. So it says, Mr. Garagos, and he feels like there's a train that's rolling, and the train is rolling towards a conviction. The court says, the judge, I'm not so sure. Garagos, well, that's what the community, I mean, is there any way other to read that? I mean, what makes the best book? What makes the best sale? And what the community wants in the community certainly is, as you know, from spending 12 weeks here, the community certainly doesn't want a not guilty. That would tell you that, if it tells me that the jury foreman was leaning towards a not guilty and everybody else is one guilty. And he's worried that they're being swayed by public opinion, which they're not supposed to be. You know, it's supposed to be sequestered, right? All scorched as fuck going. This is one of the main reasons we're still talking about this case. So let's do this. Later on in the afternoon, Chuck Smith, who's an investigator for the San Mateo County DDA's office, is escorted into the judge's chamber by the bailiff. And he comes out of the chambers, and the bailiff announced the jury had ceased deliberating for the day and asked them all to leave the courtroom, everybody. But the rumor was that someone had faxed information about juror number 6 in his intent to block the verdict, whether it's guilty or not guilty. Okay. Holy fuck. Wait a minute. You know, that's just crazy as fuck. Number 6 is the new foreman. Figure it out. And he's going to block the verdict one way or another. If that shit is true, oh, you got a problem. But must be some rumor to it. Your investigators come in telling the judge what's going on. I don't know, y'all. It's fucking crazy. It's just setting it up for people. I mean, this is a death penalty case, right? I want them to get it right. And not much else. Let's go to Friday, November the 12th, 2004. The judge enters a couple things that are sealed into the record, but DeLucci tells the court that at 1 p.m., the verdict would be read, all right? And it was read, and the clerk stands up and says the state finds Scott Peterson guilty of first-degree murder for Lacey and second-degree murder for Connor, and yes, that each murder contains special circumstances. Okay, y'all, that means he's eligible for the death penalty. So at the end, when they do this, and they'll say, so say you all, and they say yes, but then you have, and I've seen both sides do this, but Pat Harris, the ADA, or the assistant DA, asked the judge, he said, I want the jury poll. And so they do that. They ask him, you know, juror number 1, is this your verdict? Guilty. And they say yes. They go all the way out through all of them. So that's it. Scott Peterson is guilty. Guilty after 3 months of trial and however long their bodies washed in the bay. So the world rocks, right? And the media goes crazy and everything else. That's it. He's guilty. But now the show starts. So, and the judge tells the jury that now they're going to start the penalty phase, and it'll begin on Monday, November the 22nd. And he expects it to be about, I don't know, a week or so of testimony, and that the jury will be sequestered during this entire time, which they should have been sequestered anyway. But I mean, I guess 3 months is a long fucking time. So, okay, during this time, now, you know, that was, goes on, and the court doesn't stop, right? The jury gets however many days off before they have to hear it. Meanwhile, the lawyers are busy, as lawyers are, and Garagos files a defense motion to discharge the jury. That's the one I told you about. And to dismiss the penalty phase, or the alternative for a new penalty phase, jury and change of venue. Now this motherfucker's scrambling, right? He knows they already found him guilty. And now he's swapping from guilt to fighting for Peterson's life. His motion said that the court erred in not sequestering the jury between the guilt and penalty phases, which I agree with, because what's the number one story on the news and the radio and internet, if you had it back then, and whatever? How do you not have them under lock and key away from everything? I mean, the whole world was cheering. You remember the videos, but cheering outside, guilty, guilty, and we got him and all that shit, right? So this scorched. The judge fucked that up. But anyway, continuing with his argument, he said, and by doing so, he released the jurors into a community that embraced them as heroes for convicting Peterson. He said, they're so poisoned. How can these jurors fairly determine, without bias, whether Mr. Peterson should live or die? Alternatively, to dismissing the penalty phase, which would result in the defendant receiving life without possibility of parole. And his motion requested a new jury be impaneled and the venue be changed for the death penalty phase. All right, let's talk about that. He's like, if you just want to do away with the penalty phase, we'll take life without, right? Save my client's life. But this change of venue and getting a whole new fucking jury for the penalty phase, never been done. And not that I know of. And I think that's him just throwing shit up that he's praying is going to stick on appeal. Well, one thing that's going to fucking stick on appeal is the fact that the judge didn't sequester the jury. He just let him go home. He let them go into the community. And I distinctly remember the people cheering and chanting and the hatred that people had for Scott Peterson. Garagos isn't the only one who gets to file motions. The prosecution filed their opposition to Garagos' motion to discharge the jury and dismiss the penalty phase and the new jury and change of venue. They stated that Garagos' motion incorrectly claimed some 1,000 people had assembled outside the courthouse to hear the verdict and that car horns were honked as the jury was still in the box. And the DA reminds the court that Garagos did not use all of his preemptory challenges during the voir dire and therefore had accepted this jury.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Now, I might have him on that. That's a good sticking point. But he says, regarding the first foreman's request to be removed from the jury, the district attorney claims that he retracted his claim and that a vote of the jury had not yet been taken. And the DA reminds the court that the defendant does not have the right to have a jury sequestered or to have a separate jury for the guilt and penalty phases, and he referred to previous cases on the subject. The DA requests denial of the change of venue on the grounds that publicity has been so widespread in this case that the defendant can't show that anything would be different in any other jurisdiction. Good response. I think he's got that correct. I don't know if there were 1,000 people outside the courtroom, but there was a fucking lot and they were honking horns and stuff. So I don't know. So the judge has got a rule, right? And what judges do. So the judge says, okay, also this is all the way to Tuesday, November 30th. Judge says, okay, also I want to make part of the record. I have obviously Mr. Garagos filed a petition for a writ of mandate. That's the one I told y'all about, y'all. And I have the ruling by the first appellate district judge, Justice Klein. And I'm going to mark that next in order. I'll make that court exhibit, which is a denial. And he sent it to the California Supreme Court, et cetera, et cetera. And he said the application for stay and petition for review is denied and will also be filed as an exhibit, blah, blah, blah. And there you have it, right? Cuts them off. But hey, you got to think DiLucci is kind of shitting his pants by this point in time because he knows this case is going to get fucking hammered because of Scorch. So, but like before the guilt phase, when both sides got to have their input on the instructions for the jury, and the judge meets with both sides, and they want to find out what's acceptable, and they had arguments about what you could put in, what you couldn't put in, et cetera. Well, guess what? Now we're at the penalty phase. Live or die, motherfucker, right? And the judge has new instructions, and I'm going to read them to you because they're very important. So the judge says, now the jury's sitting in a box. Judge says, again, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, what I'm going to do this morning, I'm going to pre-instruct you. Remember when we went through in the voir dire a long time, months ago, I went through the process of how you go through deciding which would be the appropriate penalty in this case, about weighing these aggravating and mitigating factors. I'm going to pre-instruct you now so you get another idea where we're going and how you're supposed to approach this part of the trial. And then we're going to have the opening statement by the prosecutor. Going to take approximately 10 minutes. And then we're going to send you out for lunch. I know you've had a long morning. Now we're ready to proceed, okay? So you're going to hear these instructions again. But these, I'm just going to pre-instruct you as to certain portions that you will hear again, okay? The defendant in this case has been found guilty of murder in the first degree. The allegation that the murder was committed under a special circumstance has been specially found to be true. Hence, setting it up for the death penalty, y'all. I mean, you can get first degree murder, no special, or second degree murder, no special circumstances, and you're not eligible for the death penalty. But here we go. Judge continues. It is the law of the state that the penalty for the defendant found guilty of murder of first degree shall be death or confinement in the state prison for life without the possibility of parole in any case in which the special circumstance alleged in this case has specially found to be true. I instruct you that life in prison without the possibility of parole means exactly what it says, that the defendant will be in prison in the state prison for the rest of his life. You are further instructed that the death penalty means exactly what it says. The defendant will, in fact, be executed. For you to conclude otherwise would be for you to rely on conjecture and speculation, and it would be a violation of your oath as trial jurors. Under the law of the state, you must now determine which of these penalties shall be imposed on the defendant. Y'all, you can imagine, you can hear a pin drop in the courtroom, right? In deciding whether death or life in prison without the possibility of parole is the appropriate sentence, you may not consider for any reason whatsoever the deterrent or non-deterrent effect of the death penalty, or the monetary cost to the state of execution or maintaining a prisoner for life, cannot enter into your deliberations in any way, right? So you got to just do it on the special circumstances. You can't think if he gets out or you know, we don't put him to death, he can be in regular prison population, going to kill somebody, or that it costs millions and millions of dollars to put somebody to death. That can't figure in. All right. Continuing with DeLucci. He says, you will be instructed as to all of the law that applies to the penalty phase of this trial. You must determine what the facts are from the evidence received during the entire trial, unless you are instructed otherwise. You must accept and follow the law that I state to you. Disregard all other instructions given to you in other phases of the trial. You must neither be influenced by bias nor prejudice against the defendant, nor swayed by public opinion or public feelings. Both the people and the defendant have a right to expect that you will consider all of the evidence, follow the law, and exercise your discretion consciously and reach a just verdict.
Statements made by the attorneys during the trial are not evidence. However, if the attorneys stipulate or agree to a fact, you must regard that fact as proven. If an objection was sustained to a question, do not guess what the answer might have been. Do not speculate as to the reason for the objection. Do not assume to be true any insinuation suggested by a question asked a witness. A question is not evidence and may be considered only as it helps you to understand the answer. Do not consider for any purpose any offer of evidence that was rejected or any evidence that was stricken by the court. Treat it as though you had never heard of it. Now, you have heard some of this before when we went through the voir dire, when I took you through this, how you go through this balancing. So I'm going to explain that to you now in a little more detail. In determining which penalty is to be imposed, you shall consider all of the evidence which has been received during any part of the trial of this case, except as you may hereinafter be instructed. You shall consider, take into account, and be guided by the following factors, if applicable. The circumstances of the crime for which the defendant was convicted and the present proceedings and the existence ever any special circumstances found to be true. The presence or absence of criminal activity by the defendant other than the crimes which the defendant has been tried in the present proceedings, which involve the use or attempted use of force or violence, or the express or implied threat to use of force or violence. Presence or absence of any prior felony conviction other than the crimes for which the defendant has been tried in the present proceedings. Y'all, they're saying you just got to judge on the facts here. Okay. It's long, I know, but bear with it. So whether or not the victim was a participant in the defendant's homicidal conduct or consents to the homicidal act. Well, I'm pretty sure Lacey didn't bring this on herself. But whether or not the offense was committed under circumstances which the defendant reasonably believed to be a moral justification or extenuation for his conduct, meaning like if he came home and caught Lacey in bed with his best friend or something, that's not to be considered. But whether or not the defendant acted under extreme duress, under the substantial domination of another person, whether or not at the time of the offense, the capacity of the defendant to appreciate the criminality of his conduct or to conform his conduct to the requirements of law was impaired as a result of mental disease or defect or the effects of intoxication, the age of the defendant at the time of the crime, whether or not the defendant was an accomplice to the offense and his participation in the commission of the offense was relatively minor, and any other circumstance which extenuates the gravity of the crime, even though it is not a legal excuse for the crime, in any sympathetic or other aspects of the defendant's character or record that the defendant offers as a basis for the sentence less than death, whether or not related to the offense for which he is on trial, you must disregard any jury instruction given you in the guilt or innocent phase of this trial, which conflicts with this principle. You may also consider any lingering or residual doubt as to the defendant's guilt or intent as a factor in mitigation. Lingering or residual doubt is defined as a state of mind between reasonable doubt and beyond all possible doubt. You may not relitigate or reconsider matters resolved in the guilt phase, but you may consider lingering doubt as a factor in mitigation. Okay? Now you're going to get all these. You will have these with you in the jury room, but that's just to have some direction so you know what to be listening for when you hear the evidence. All right, y'all, It's confusing as fuck, I know. But basically, you know, you can't. Everything that I just read to you, and that's all. None of that is scores. That's the standard in any case like this. And because I want to move on, I want to get into the opening statement by David Harris. Again, prosecution gets to go first. So David Harris stands up. And he says, as the judge has instructed you, one of the factors to consider is the circumstances of the crime. And as we go through this part of the trial, the penalty phase, the circumstances of the crime are like ripples on the water. When the defendant dumped the bodies of his wife, his unborn son, into the bay, those ripples spread out. They touch many, many lives. Those are circumstances of the crime. You're going to hear, as part of this portion of the trial, from Brent Rocha, Amy Rocha, Ron Gransky, and Sharon Rocha. They are going to try and explain something to you. They are going to try and explain something to you that, you know, you now need to consider as part of the circumstances of the crime. And that is, who are the victims? Who was Lacey Peterson? Who was Connor Peterson? Because for you to decide what the circumstances of the crime were, you have to know the victims. So these witnesses are going to tell you who Lacey and Connor were. They are going to talk to you about the joy that Lacey brought into their life. They are going to talk to you about what it's like to have a big sister like Lacey. What it was like to grow up and play with Lacey as a younger sister. You're going to hear about her as a person and what she meant to this family and the loss that they all suffered. You are going to hear about that because that is a circumstance of the crime. That is one of the factors for you to consider. You are also going to hear about what Lacey's plans were, what her dreams were, the baby she wanted, baby Connor. You're going to hear about the plans that Lacey and Brent had for Connor to grow up with cousins and play like they did. You're going to hear about Connor and the plans that a grandmother who's going to have to spoil that baby shopping and all the things that grandparents do, but were taken away in this particular case. You are also going to hear about something else in this particular case. You're going to get to hear from them how they had to live this day in and day out, starting on Christmas Eve with a killer in their midst. This monstrous act by the defendant, the ripples on the water as it touched them. You're going to hear what it was like for a mother every single day, waiting to find out what happened to her daughter, waiting to find out what happened to her grandson. That panic, that fear, never knowing what happened. 116 days. The entire time with the defendant, the one who caused those ripples in the pond, is in their midst. You're going to hear that they actually feel guilty because they didn't protect Lacey from the one person they didn't think she needed protection from. You're going to hear how the second part of the circumstance of this crime, not just who Lacey was, but how it touched his family. How as we come close to Christmas time, their holidays will never be the same. How Mother's Day will never be the same. How birthdays will never be the same. How there is a hole in their heart that can never be repaired. They're going to try, in the words that they can, explain to you what that circumstance of the crime means to them. what it's like to be left behind. As the judge has already told you, he's instructed you, given instructions, these are, this is an aggravating circumstance. Circumstance of the crime. You're going to hear about, you've already heard about one of the mitigating factors, and that's the lack of prior record of the defendant. When we're all done with this, after the witnesses have testified, I'm going to have an opportunity to come back up and talk to you at that point in time. As the judge told you, it will be your duty to weigh these aggravating bad things versus the mitigating, the good things, the positive things. I'm going to tell you now, when I get up and come back up here and argue you at the end of the case, based on what you're going to hear of the circumstances of this crime from this family out here, the only appropriate and just punishment will be death. Thank you. And then he sits down, y'all. So I'm going to conclude this episode now. But it's an appropriate point, obviously. And on the next episode, right back into the death penalty phase. And holy shit, I don't know. It's powerful. I've never been in a death penalty phase of a trial where it wasn't powerful AF, right? Because it's just, the prosecution is going to say, this is why he needs to be put to death, because he did this. He killed the baby. He did, whatever. The damning facts, the special circumstances, right? It's not like it's just a drive-by and they just shot somebody standing on the corner. Of course, the defense is going to say everything from he had mental illness to drug use, whatever the fuck. He was abused as a kid, like the Menendez brothers are doing now. They're going to say everything that they can to try to tip the scales of justice in Scott Peterson's way, not to find him guilty, but to try to save his life. We'll get into it again next week. And I love and appreciate every one of y'all. Thank you. This is the longest by far series I've ever done, but man, just got more information on it today, y'all, which I got to tell it in sequential order. This case is crazy and it's scorched. And I'm going to be honest with you, all of the shenanigans and shit that went on. I'm a hard ass. I'm for proving a motherfucker guilty and stuff, but I don't know. I'll save it for my final episode of Scorch. But love and appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so much for liking and listening and sharing. Go download the Real Life Real Crime Community app for free. I'll go in there every day. It's got forums, all the episodes and everything else. You can subscribe if you want to become a convict in there and get your commercial free early releases, plus all your bonus episodes, plus all the stuff like on all the different cases that I've worked over the years. Complete case files, including the new one, hashtag justice for Haley, with all the videos that we put up thus far. And just a lot of stuff. If you don't want to download the app, get it. You can do the same thing on Patreon. Go to patreon.com, research Real Life Real Crime, or type in Real Life Real Crime, and it'll bring up the different tier levels on, and each higher level, you get more stuff, right? So that's the business side of things, but I love you, Patreon convicts. Thank you so much. You help us run every day, and we appreciate it. Everyone else, I love you just as much. Merry, merry, merry Christmas, and, golly, I guess, no, it won't be New Year's yet, but merry, merry, merry Christmas, and just hope you're all blessed. LOPA, Louisiana, Oregon, hashtag justice for Haley. LOPA, Louisiana, Oregon Procurement Agency. They are a nonprofit. They save lives every day. I've been, it's my jam. I'm going to continue to tout them to the day I die on Real Life Real Crime. And y'all go sign up to be an organ donor. It takes a couple of minutes. You don't have to be a lifer from Louisiana to go sign up. you could be a lifer from Merida, Mexico. Go to lopa.org. Take 2 minutes, fill out the questionnaire, become a hero, give the gift of life and sight and all those things. They're saving lives every day, y'all, and they can't do it without organ donors. And I'm Woody Overton, you host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace. Merry Christmas. Happy birthday, Jesus.
Yeah, the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door,
save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.